Welcome to TSF Life, a podcast ministry of the Shepherd's Fellowship Church in Marion, Ohio. TSF Life is designed to bring you biblical teaching in a relational way that's easy to apply to your life. Let's join Pastor Tom Hypes as we dive into today's teaching.
Well, as most of you know, again, we've been in the season of Advent, which is purposely stopping, pausing throughout the month and through the devotions throughout the week, through the Facebook page, to be able to look at the different attributes of Christmas, keep us focused on that Christmas attitude, so that when it gets to, Thursday, that we're ready to go. Christmas Eve, and then also for Christmas. So we've looked at multiple different things that each candle represents. We've talked about hope, we've talked about peace, we've talked about joy, and we've talked about each one by kind of starting out with what area of our life does that minister to? So we talked about things such as dumpster villages, we talked about war zones, we've talked about the upside down, and then we looked at different heroes of our faith and their testimonies on how they found hope, peace, and joy in the middle of the crappy things that we go through in life. And so we've looked at Daniel, we looked at Ruth, and we've looked at Moses so far. So today we're going to go into another one, so I'm going to give you kind of another environment to kind of bring to the table, starting out. Again, some of these bleed over into others, so your war zone might be the same as your dumpster village and those type of things, but just to kind of get you in the ballpark of the scope that we're looking at. Today we're going to look at dark nights. Dark nights are just, I'll just read it here. A dark night is when you're going through a dark season in your life, whether you're struggling with your faith, lost a loved one, going through family issues, if you feel alone at Christmas time. It's a time of darkness, little to no light, and without a sense of love. So kind of think about those areas of your life. For some of us, that's going to be pretty easy. It's going to come up pretty quick. For others of us, maybe you're just in a really good place right now, and I pray that's the case for you. But as we know, everything's a season. A season comes, a season goes. And so you could probably, more than likely, remember dark seasons in your past. Or you might be getting some of this information for a dark night in the future. Or you might know someone that's going through a dark night. And this might be a good thing to be able to get some information, be able to get into a testimony, be able to see how God works in it, so that you can minister to others. Because again, it's not always just about us getting stuff for us. And so that's the general feeling that I want to get into with you guys. So has everybody kind of got that? Any questions on that? Everybody's, I think it's somewhat self-explanatory when we're looking at dark nights. That's what we're bringing to the table today as we're going to look at the story of Jonathan. Now, Jonathan's going to intertwine quite a bit between him and David and the story that's there, but we're going to look at their dark nights and how love makes all the difference when it comes to dark night experiences. So if you want to, you can go ahead and get your Bibles out. We're going to go to 1 Samuel 18, and that's going to be probably the first place I'm going to be reading from. I'm going to sum up quite a bit. I'm going to read some today, and then we're going to talk off of those. But again, there's Bibles in the baskets underneath the chairs around the room. If you want to steal those, keep those, borrow those, I don't care. And then also, the YouVersion is up and running as well. But just kind of get to chapter 18. Put your finger there. Put a bookmark there. I'm going to babble a little bit before we get there, because I want to talk to you about chapter 17 before we're reading in 18. Just to set the stage for what I want to look at with Jonathan's life. Now, again, if you don't know Jonathan's life well, it's in the ballpark of Saul, King Saul in the Old Testament. It's in the ballpark big time of David. Those are the three main relationships that we're going to be looking at. But 17 sets the context for what we're really heading for in 18. 17 is the story of David and Goliath, which most people, not all, but most people have a pretty good familiarity with the David and Goliath story. Again, it's a big VBS thing. It's a big kids' book version. If you were raised going to church every once in a while, grandma or grandpa, it's talked about a lot in church. If you're going to find it in your own personal studies. But even beyond that, it's pretty well known in pop culture as well. You see that mentality, even like in football games, when you got an underdog or that type of thing. This is a real David and Goliath situation here. We've got this little team here going up against a big giant team here. So generally, we have a feel for that, and David always looks great, right? Because David came to the battle, to the Philistines. And just so you know, the Philistines are the enemy through every story I talk to you about today. They're the anti-God lovers. Israel is God's people. And so David comes out, right, Goliath's out there, and the Philistines are like, let's just take us down to a one-on-one. Whoever wins takes it all. Send out whoever you want against our giant. And they're like, nobody would go out there. Everybody's scared. David, this kid that just came to bring some sandwiches to his brothers and check in on them, says these people stand affront to God. And so we've got to do something. So he goes out without armor with his slingshot, right, kills Goliath, and everybody goes, yay! Okay, everybody caught up? Everybody caught up. That's 17. To get to 18, we start to see a little bit more of this Jonathan, Saul, David, Dark Knight aspect of things. We have to look at that David and Goliath story and realize David was not the only hero that was there that day. He's obviously the most easy to see, and he is the one that succeeded in faith that day, but he's not the only hero that was there. Jonathan was there, but Jonathan failed on this particular day. And so when you go back a little bit, like if I go back to 1 Samuel 13, we have a situation where Saul's going up, King Saul, right? And Jonathan's his son, so he's basically the prince, the next one to take over everything. And Saul goes out, and he's going against the Philistines, the bad people, and he takes 2,000 men with him, and he sends his son over there to fight these Philistines, and he sends 1,000 with him. So Jonathan's got worse odds than what Saul does on this. But yet they're both victorious, and Jonathan wins with lesser men. And then he comes in, because again, he's going up against God's enemy. That's his mentality. God's going to deliver us to us. And he comes back, and Saul gets credit for all of it. And we see nothing where Jonathan's like, oh man, I was doing my best, and I was the one that did this. But he had no problem going with lesser men up against the enemy, because he believed that was what God wanted him to do, and that God would have him covered. In the next chapter, in chapter 14, we see a little bit more of like a movie-type moment from my standpoint, where Jonathan is out with his buddy, his armor bearer or his aide or however you want to look at it, just the two of them, and they see another garrison of Philistines. And I don't know if this is fact or if this is just like commentary stuff and different people have different views. Again, you're stuck with the Bible. You can pick and choose what I say. But from what I've seen, it seems like this particular garrison is a smaller garrison of about 20 people, but it's still 2 versus 20. And so Jonathan, I think the easiest way to explain it is he decides he's going to pick a fight with these guys. And so he says to his buddy, he says, let's go up so they can see us, and this is what we're going to do. Now, I'm not encouraging this as basic theology for you to decide whether or not you should pick a fight with somebody. But this is what Jonathan did. And it is in the Old Testament a decent amount, but I don't know if it's the best way to go. But he says, we're going to go up, let them see us. And if they say, you guys stay right there, we're going to come down there and teach you a lesson, then we're out of here. We're out of here. But if they say, come up here and we'll teach you a lesson, well, that's God letting us know that he's delivered them over to us, and we're going to go up there and kick the butts. And so they go out, and they make themselves known, and the Philistines say, look at those two little men out there. Get up here, and we're going to teach you a lesson. They're like, here we go. And so they go up, and they defeat that garrison because they believed that God had given them and knew that God had given them this battle. And so he went without any fear whatsoever in that case scenario. And when I say movie moment, those are the type of things I would love to see now that we've got the technology for them to put into a movie. To me, and you'll get this because you're good Christian people, so you understand Star Wars. But it's much like when, like, Rey and Ren, you still with me? Okay, you can stay. Like when Ren reveals he's not going to go with the evil guy and kills him, and so that Rey and Ren are fighting back to back against all the Imperial Guards and the red outfits. Everybody's still there, and there's all this lightsaber stuff going on and kicks and fights and all that stuff. That's that kind of moment to me, like these two guys just going into there. That takes a lot of faith to have that kind of courage to be able to do it. It just so happens that a couple chapters later, he has a bad day. He has a bad day. I know that God can deliver me anything, but look at that guy. Look at that guy. He's been through similar experiences as David, but on that day, he froze. But then, between these two victorious moments he has, there's a situation that happens in between. So he beat the garrison with 1,000. He's not yet come up against the 20. But this moment happens when Samuel and Saul has a conversation, because the king, Saul, was being unfaithful to God. And what I would, from a worldly standpoint, almost consider a minor situation, but nonetheless was unfaithfulness. And so the prophet tells him, look, here's what's going to happen. God's hand is off of you because you're not faithful. And you will lose your kingship, and your family will lose the royal line. Because again, the only other thing that would do that is if they were conquered by another king. Your son's not going to be king now. And so because of that, God has picked another. God has picked another, which we know is David, that he's going to anoint to be the next king. When that happens, okay, so we have this Jonathan, the brave over here. Saul gets very paranoid, and that's very distressing news. We're not going to see that so much in Scripture, except outside the fact that it's going to be confirmed in a minute. But again, educated biblical imagination. How would you feel? God's taking his hand off of me. My son's not going to be king. This is everything I've been building on this. And so I truly believe, and again, I think this what we're about to read is going to confirm that this is true, that Saul went into this thing of like, who is it? Who is this threat to everything that I am, everything as I've always thought was going to go to my family ever since I've been made king, my authority, my popularity? Who is the threat that's going to take that from me? And this is even another step away of Tom and not necessarily Scripture. I would imagine that he shares with this his family, and that Jonathan himself is wondering, who is this threat? Why am I not going to be able to be king? Most reasons is because you get killed. Am I going to be killed? What things are coming into this place? So there's very much, I believe, an uncomfortable foundation going into the battle when it comes to David and Goliath. And like I said, I'll show this to you as we read. So we're going to go to chapter 18, and I'll start reading on that a little bit, and I'll show you what I mean when I think the dark nights are starting to come into place. So we're going to actually start out in verse 6. I'm going to come back to verse 1 through 5, but I first want to look at Saul's perspective and what David is going through when it comes to dark nights. So verse 6 says, as they were coming home, okay, so this is Jonathan, David, Saul, all the army, all the battle, they're all coming home. When David returned from striking down the Philistine, or the giant, the woman came out of the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. This is what he's used to. This is the praise that he comes back from being a victorious king. This is we see this in other areas of the Scripture. He's excited about it. The woman sang to one another as they celebrated, and they said, Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. He said, they're ascribing to David 10,000s, and to me they've only ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. He found his threat. Do you see that? That's why I feel that's absolutely not only logical, but the actual fact of the situation. When he knew God's hand was going to move from him, he started looking for the threat. What else can this be but this David kid? Verse 10, the next day a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul and raved within his house while David was playing the lyre. And as he did day by day, Saul had his spear in his hand. And Saul hurled the spear, and he thought, I will pin David to the wall, but David evaded him twice. So now his solution, kind of like in Cain and Abel, my solution is I'll kill David. I'll take the threat out, and it wasn't working. Verse 12, Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. So Saul removed him, David, from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. But David had success in all of his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in as before him. The way I see that this next, that paragraph, is he couldn't kill him with the spear, so I'm going to send him out with just 1,000 men. Now, how many men did he send out with Jonathan? Do you remember? 1,000. He took his 2,000, sent his son with 1,000. He's sending him out the exact same way he did his son, so he has less odds. I'm not saying he's trying to kill Jonathan. I'm saying that there's a comparison there, that he will get killed in battle, and then that threat would be gone. And that didn't work either. So Saul is having a very dark night experience. There's very little light. There's very little hope. There's nothing really that he can do that is going to change the situation. David, I would assume, is going through a dark night experience himself. He knows that the anointing is on him, but he's not king yet. And he comes out there to give his brother some sandwiches, and the king says, "You're never leaving my side again." And so he doesn't even get to go home to dad to do that report. He doesn't get to see dad again for I think, at least a while. And so now he's in the palace. He's now serving the king. The king wants him dead. That's not a very good spot to be in either. Then if you've got all of it and you bring in Jonathan in the middle of it, what's Jonathan going through? Again, is this going to be the victor? Will he kill me? Will he kill my family? Why am I being taken out when I'm being faithful to God and my dad is the idiot? Well, there's a lot of different things he would have here that I would think that he saw, same thing Saul did, and would see a threat in front of him. Let's go back to verse 1. Verse 1 says this, "As soon as he has finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as if he was himself, his own soul. And Saul took that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David. And then he took off his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And when David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants." Jonathan's going through a very similar situation as far as losing everything, but his reaction is completely different, that his dark night is lifted. Jonathan is mature enough and humble enough and faithful to God enough to be able to look at David out there on that field and say, first off, there's a guy that has my heart to go against God's enemy and that God's going to deliver him. And he's actually doing it, and this time I ran. This time I hid. Certainly he should be king. Certainly he should be the next one. Certainly he is a man that God's hand should be upon. And immediately leaned in and said, "I love you like a brother," and takes his garments, these are his royal garments, and gives them to David as a sign of saying, "Yep, you're the next king." Do you see, in this little example things, how love can change a dark night very, very quickly? Our perception changes, our situation changes, us leaning into God changes, and that God can move in ways that we have not seen before. And it stays like that for all of David and Jonathan's lives. We see a few different situations as we go through here. I'm going to jump over to the chapter 20. You might want to jump there. Maybe I'll read some of that. We'll see how much we get into. But we see them go through some different situations. And Saul, again, he continues his dark night. He wants David dead. David's still going through the stress of the king wanting him dead. And we find this one time where David and Jonathan are talking to each other in 1 Samuel 20. And David is hitting himself because of this threat, because of this dark night. And he's talking to Jonathan, and he's like, "Listen, your dad wants me dead." And Jonathan's, my version of what he says basically is, "Yeah, he's thrown a spear at you a few times, but he's not actually going to kill you. He doesn't do anything without running it through me first. So if he came to me and said, 'I want David dead,' you'd be the first one to know." And David looked at him and said, "That's cute, but you're wrong. Your dad knows how close we are. He is not going to let you in on this plan. He wants me dead." And so they come up with a little bit of a plan where Jonathan's going to kind of set up dad a little bit, see where dad's heart is, why David is hiding, and then they come up with a code of how to let David know whether or not there's an issue. This is going to be chapter 20, verse 20, where Jonathan says, "Look, you go out in this field, and I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of a target as though I shot at a mark." And Jonathan, according to this, is just an incredible archer, okay? "So I'm going to shoot 3 arrows to the side of it, and behold, I'll send my assistant, this boy, and I'll say, 'Go find the arrows. And if I yell to the boy, look, the arrows are on this side of you, then you pick them up, take them, and then you come on in because everything's fine. So everything's good, it's safe for you, and there's no danger. But if I say to that youth, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you, keep going,' then leave. For the Lord has sent you away, and as far as for this matter of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." Next day, he comes out, shoots three arrows. They're beyond you. And David goes, and he hides. And that's the last we really see of him and Jonathan together, after he warns him that, there is definitely a plan against him and that he needs to go for his safety. There's a lot more to that as far as him fleeing and how everything that happens. I would love for you to read that at home and dig into it, maybe even this week as part of your Christmas. But I believe that gives us the general scope to see how their love continues. So, like I said, it continues the rest of life. If you want to go to 2 Samuel 1, I'll show you what I think is phenomenal considering everything that they went through and the dark nights that are on the table between Saul and David. But at the beginning of 2 Samuel, we find that there's a battle and Saul is killed. And in that same battle, Jonathan is killed. And when David finds out about them being killed, in chapter 1, he laments. If you guys were around early, like the beginning of this school year, we had, what was it this year, Dan? Lamenting. We did that this year, didn't we? Or was it last year? Anyway, but yeah, we did a study on lamenting on Wednesday nights, which is just, again, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to grieve in the spirit. And David here is lamenting the loss of not just Jonathan, but Saul. It shows his maturity. Verse 22, the middle of his lament, he says, "For the blood of the slain, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. You daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed your luxury in scarlet and put ornaments of gold on your pillow. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I'm distressed for you, my brother. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of woman. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war have perished." To the very end, that brotherly love continued in a strong sense that continued to guide David further, as we see that love not doesn't handle those dark nights, but moves on. But we're going to talk about that in a second. So, with that on the table, let's talk about bullet points. Bet you guys can't guess what the bullet points are. They are the exact same as last week and the week before and the week before that, because how we find peace, how we find joy, how we find hope, and how we find love and how they make a difference in our lives during these really dark, impassable seasons is the same. We all have struggles, but we lean into God's way. I can't tell you how many people I talk to that are wanting to talk about the struggles in their lives and can't figure out why God is letting this happen, that have not been in the Word, that have not grabbed a hold of His promises, that have not been living by His principles, and they can't figure out why nothing's changed. We see these changes happen where we lean into God's way. We trust and we have faith that God will move in ways that we absolutely cannot. We've seen that in each of these stories, including here with Jonathan and David. In your love faithfulness, God will position you. We see that. In your love faithfulness, others will notice. We see that. Attacks will come against love, hope, peace, joy. That's just how Satan is, and that's the fallen world that we live in. And that each of these lead to a godly legacy. We're still talking about David and Jonathan today, because there was something unique, something special, something that was godly within their friendship. And so all these things still stay into place. But I want to take a little bit further than that, with just a couple of additional points that are a little bit more specific to love. The first one being, I want to define what love is. And so several of you are probably thinking, oh, he's going to 1 Corinthians 13:13 next. Because that's the one we read at all the weddings. Love is patient, love is kind, love doesn't hold on to grudges, da-da-da-da-da. Great, great definition of love. Not just great for weddings, but great for every day as far as how we're supposed to love each other. But I'm not going to that one today. I want to go a little bit different, a little bit deeper with you. Because one of the things I love about the Greek language that we don't have in the English is the Greek has multiple words for love, defining what love, depending on the kind of love. We just have to go by context when we say love. You know, so if it was, let's see, it's been a little over 25 years since Jenny and I got married. And it's somewhat humorous if you don't use context. If we're doing our vows and I'm you know, she's, of course, taking and saying how much she loves me and how she's going to be with me forever and how submissive she's going to be and all these things. And then I go to my vows and say, yeah, I love you too. And so, but no, you see people talking about love in the marriages and people are crying and it's this great celebration and stuff. But then, like, if you go to the reception and you're going through the reception and a song comes on and the groom jumps up and goes, I love this song. I need me some Baby Got Back, right? And he gets up there and starts dancing around and stuff. Those are two completely different loves. Two completely different loves. But we don't have words for that in our language. The Greek does. Maybe not for Baby Got Back. Look, put an extra bullet. But here's some of the Greek words for love. Just so you kind of get a feel for it. And these are probably the most popular within it. Eros is a passionate love. That's generally best defined as if a guy and a girl start dating and they just can't stop thinking about them each other, that's going to be eros. This is that initial fast love, and it will either dissipate or take root into a deeper love. And that's why a lot of people, like, if you got engaged real quick or you got married somewhat quick or somewhat young, and then it's like, man, I used to love them so much, and it just doesn't feel the same. Right, because eros is gone, and you didn't commit to a deeper love that you continue to work on, you keep working into. So passionate love is more that initial honeymoon period type feel. Philia is brotherly love. That's why you have Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. That's going to be, I love you like a brother, I love you like a sister. There's a commitment there. If you love someone as a brother or as a sister, you probably shouldn't marry them. It's a different kind of love. I will not say, what would you guess on that? Eurotopia is a floaty love. That's more if you just, again, that's going to be more casual. Some people are more floaty than others, but it's not like a deep established relationship. Maybe comes before passionate love. Storge. It's going to be a family love, how I love my mother, how I love my brother, how I love my siblings, my children. And then another Philly, sure. Philly, I ate you? That's a self-love. That's how I love myself. And by the way, you're allowed to love yourself. Just don't let it be a cockiness. Let it be a confidence in how God sees you. That's how you love yourself. And so in this case, when we look at Jonathan, we are going to see filial, we're going to see brotherly love. We are going to see storge, and we're going to see the last one, philetia, self-love, because he loves Jonathan as he loves himself. And so we see and understand that love a little bit better. It saves some walls for me. Bye, kiddo. But and we have to understand, because I know all of us have heard different times people try to attribute different feelings behind the word love, including in the scripture, to fit a point or to fit a belief or whatever the case would be. That bothers me for two reasons. One is I don't like twisting scripture to fit a point. And secondly, because I think it takes away from Jonathan and David's relationship with each other. I'm a big brotherly love guy. I'm a sucker for those stories. I love the Three Musketeers, one for all for one type deal. I pull in that stuff. I generally like Sherlock Holmes and Watson, especially the British version of that, like that we got each other's back type things. Not to continue to reference this particular culture thing, but it is the season. But like when they just brought out the preview for the next three episodes of Stranger Things, do you see these? And Steve is taking and talking to Dustin and says, if you die, I die. And Dustin says it back. We're going to cry, girl. We're going to be crying. But I love brotherly love, and I love the fact that we can have that kind of relationship without making it into something that it's not. Your love for me has surpassed the love for women. And David did love a lot of women. So with that, the other point that I want to bring with that, as far as especially within the legacy end of things, is, and I didn't put this on screen, but you can write this down if you want, love in your dark night spreads into others. And so when we see Jonathan come with love, it didn't just lift his dark night, but it lifted David's as well. And it also lifted into other people's areas. After Jonathan's death, and David's getting more and more control as king, there comes a time, this is in chapter 9. I'll put it up there for you. 2 Samuel chapter 9. David says, is there still anyone left at the house of Saul? I just stopped there. Like, if you were just listening to it, you don't have the rest of it in front of you. This would be a common question that a new king would ask. Is there anybody left in that lineage that can challenge my position and we're going to kill him? That's very commonplace, so that they do not have a threat against them like Saul had with David. But that's not David's heart. Is there anybody left in the house of Saul, who was my enemy, that I can show kindness to because of Jonathan? Is there anybody that's, and there's a guy, he's got a long name, I'm going to call him Mephi. There's a guy named Mephi. And if you don't believe that many people thought that was the intent, when Jonathan died, when Saul died, it became evident that David's going to be the next one. Mephi's guardian, because Mephi had a limp issue. He was born with a problem with his legs. She grabbed him and took off, and they had an accident, and he was crippled for life in it. And they took and they hit him because they thought that he would be killed because of David's new position. And so someone comes to him and says, well, there is a son. There was a son named Mephi. And I didn't mark this, but let's see if I can find this. Yeah, here we go. I'm going to read a little bit more than I planned. But it said that he called for Mephi. And Mephi, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, this is going to be verse 6, chapter 9, if you want to write down the reference, came to David, fell on his face, and paid homage. And David said, Mephi, and he answered, behold, I'm your servant. I'm not here to cause any problems. I am here as your servant. And David said to him, do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. And I will restore you all the land of your father. You're going to get all the land that the king had. And you shall eat at my table always. I have you. And there's a story a little bit later on where they wanted certain men killed, the enemy did, to kind of bring peace. And he said, you can have everybody but Mephi. I'm not giving up Mephi. I'll go to war for Mephi. So that love continued to even take Mephi's dark night and bring light into it as well. Love over and over and over and over again breeds love. Love brings the light into these situations. And so if you're in a season where you don't feel loved, others don't love you, God's forgotten me, I'm angry at God, whatever the case may be, not just these principles, but love of others. What if you chose to love somebody that you don't normally reach out to? Love into your life, which you say, I have no control if people love me. You kind of do in some cases. And then in other cases, people are just messed up because of the free will decision. You just got to put those boundaries there. But sometimes you're afraid of the love, so you'll block it. And so loving others, letting people love on you, loving God, letting God love on you, letting that get into such a flow that if love is the sunlight, there is no opportunity for the darkness. It's like joy. I stop and I pause and I reflect on what God has done. Nothing is as bad as what my God does for me that's good. Does that make sense? So there's some areas that we can look at very easily when it comes to bringing love into those dark nights. When I probably said dark nights at the first point, how many people immediately thought dark nights of the soul? Okay. Only a few? Okay. That's the first thing I thought. And I'm like, but the thing was I was going to, originally, I literally was going to call it the void, which again goes back to Stranger Things. And I was like, no, we did that last week. And so I'm not talking about it all this week, and I felt miserably. But Dark Nights of the Soul, I didn't do a lot of look at it. I thought that was like a John MacArthur book or something. Not John MacArthur, I'm not a big fan of his. Somebody else. And I got to looking for the origin of it, and whatever it was contemporary-wise, it actually comes from a poem from the 1500s. And so I got to look at the poem. It's written by John of the Cross, which I'm sure is a nickname and not a given. Actually, he was a priest, and that's what they called him, was John of the Cross. In the 1500s, and he wrote this poem, and I want to finish this up by reading this to you. And if someone reminds me, I will share this out on Facebook later. so that you can read it more, because it's a 15th century poem, so it's not exactly an easy read. It's not something you're like, oh, okay, let's just go with the flow on this one. It's not that. It's 15th century. And it's very much in the same feel of the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, which if you've not read that, you might want to do it with a commentary or a group of friends. It's kind of hard to follow because it's the same thing. It's poetry, and it talk about a man and a woman in their intimacy as a metaphor for God's intimacy with us and our intimacy with God. And this poem is written very much in the same way. So when he's talking about my beloved, when he's talking about the one that is loved, he is talking about himself and God. So that's the best clue I can give you as we read through this. But it is actually quite beautiful if you try to give it a shot with me. Sound good? On a dark night, kindled in love with yearnings, oh, happy chance, I went forth without being observed, my house being outrest. In the darkness and secure, by the secret ladder disguised, oh, happy chance, in darkness and in concealment, my house being outrest. In the happy night, in secret, when no one saw, no, I beheld aught without light or guide, save that which burned in my heart. The light guided me, more surely than the light of noonday, to the place where he, well I know who, was awaiting for me, a place where none else appeared. O night that guided me, O night more lovely than the dawn, O night that joined beloved with lover, lover transformed in the beloved. Upon my flowery breast, kept wholly for himself alone, there he stayed sleeping, and I caressed him, and the fanning of the cedars made a breeze. The breeze blew from the turret. As I parted his locks with his gentle hand, he wounded my neck. He caused all my senses to be suspended. I remained lost in oblivion. My face I reclined on the beloved. All ceased, and I abandoned myself, leaving my cares forgotten among those lilies.
If you were blessed by today's teaching, we hope you return for our next podcast. Or, better yet, stop by the Shepherd's Fellowship any Sunday morning to join us live. You can learn more about the church by calling 740-382-3500. Or check us out online by going to tsflife.com. That's tsflife.com. You can also support the ministry of TSF Life by donating at our church website or sending support to the Shepherd's Fellowship, 1647 Marion, Marysville Road, Marion, Ohio, 43302. Thank you for spending your time with us today, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Be blessed.